You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
That is true.
Talking about the sixth and penultimate serial of the 19th season of Doctor Who, Earthshock, which consists of four episodes that aired from March 8th, 1982 to March 16th, 1982.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring these episodes.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And today we have returning guest, fan favorite, probably. I don't know, we haven't taken a poll.
But we should take a poll.
We should take a poll, see who's the fan favorite.
Make them all fight to the death.
Oh, definitely. It's Nathan Laws! Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
No problem. So, lately, when we've been having guests on, I feel like the question has been, how you quarantining? How's that going?
Oh, yeah. So, I didn't think things would be that bad because it's like, oh, I have to work from home. Okay, I can do that. You know, I've done it before when, you know, I've had to be home to, like, let somebody into the house or whatever. So from that standpoint, that isn't bad. So I'm not out of work. But, you know, there have been some struggles. My work's given us all 10% pay cuts. That really stinks. My kids are also home from school, which, you know, yay, I can spend more time with my kids. But, boo, the teachers are really dropping the ball, and they're expected to do things without any explanation at all. And guess who gets to be teacher as well as trying to do his job during the day? That's me. So, yeah, no, that's been kind of rough just because I'm trying to get things done. And then it's like, there was one day when, like, I had one of my kids in here asking me questions about her work, and then the other kid was, like, right outside the door, like, waiting. And so it was just like, oh, my God. You know, it's like, I need to, like, set up, like, a number system, like, at the store for only two people. It's like, now serving? Okay. So, you know, there's that. I mean, otherwise, like, I don't get, like, super depressed, you know, about, like, being inside. You know, to me, this is sort of the ideal state of existence. Anyway, it's just like, you know, like, yes, nature is bad, it tries to kill you, you know, just stay indoors, this is good, you know. So that sort of thing doesn't bother me at all, and you know, I'm weathering it pretty well, I think.
Well, that's good.
Nice.
How you been, Tony?
I miss outside.
I knew you were gonna say that. Dragging me out there.
You are essential and still leaving the house. It's different. Because you're like, you'll come home and I'll be like, guess what? We're sitting out in the backyard because I'm sick of being in all of these rooms.
Right.
All of these rooms in this house. I'm sick of seeing him. So I'm just going to sit in the backyard just to be in a different place.
So Tony, does that mean like when the unseen world comes back, it'll be things like, here's the backyard. Here's the neighbor's house.
Yes.
Because it's like, now this is the unseen world. It's just like, hey, here's the next neighborhood over.
It's all of it.
Here's a Wendy's.
Let's get the story of the Wendy's.
Because we can't go in there anymore. So you got to go in there and
go in there and be like, do you remember what the inside of restaurants look like? I'll tell you all about it on the Unseen World.
Just empty booths. That's all it is. There's a lot of wasted space in restaurants right now.
Yeah.
If you think about it.
It's true.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's talk about Doctor Who.
All right.
Woo!
Let's talk about Earthshock. There's a lot to talk about, I feel like, because there's some stuff that happens in this one.
Shocking stuff.
A bit.
Some Earth-shocking things. Or as one of our friends of Rassilon, Ian, keeps saying, if this was done today, it'd be called Earthshook.
Yeah, the one thing that, like, saddens me as someone who listens to your show is that, you know, Joe, this would have been so much better if you went into this completely, like, not knowing, you know, what was going to happen in this one.
I didn't actually know that it was going to be this serial for a little while. Then I found out somehow. But even
it's
if I hadn't known that he was going to die, I would have known he was going to leave, because they make that pretty apparent at a couple of points. Like, just from a writer's standpoint, I can go, ah, that's what this scene at the beginning's about. Ah, that's what this, you know, like, weird, sad scene where he's like, I'll be back soon. Yeah, right. You know?
Yeah. It is telegraphed a little bit.
But, so, I maybe wouldn't have thought he, you know, went the way of the dinosaurs, but,
Oh, jeez.
Oh, that's a good one.
So let's dive into it. Let's start at the beginning, shall we?
You got a title?
I got a title for episode one. My title for episode one is The Cave of the Dinosaurs.
Okay.
Yeah. So you might notice a theme with mine. My episode one is Future Shock.
Oh, nice. Are they all going to be some sort of shock?
Yeah.
Fair enough. So we start off in, you know, that classic Doctor Who setting.
A staple, really.
Yeah. A quarry. Yay. And we meet Lieutenant Scott and his team. They are scanning for life in a cave. There was a woman, Professor Kyle is her name. She went down into the cave with a bunch of people, and then they were attacked. She was the only one to get out, and they're trying to see if they can find her crew, her team. I guess they were digging for bones or something. I don't really remember what they were doing down there.
Yeah, they're digging for bones.
How incompetent are these things that they're taking on, like, some unarmed, like, paleontologists and geologists, and yet somehow one of them is able to get away? You know, I'm trying to think of, you know, we see how deadly these things are taking on soldiers and stuff, but it's like, really? They let somebody escape?
She had, like, one of those bone hammer things, you know? Like, rock hammers. That was very scary. I don't know anything about paleontologists. Everything I know about paleontologists, I learned from the film Jurassic Park.
100% accurate.
Yeah, which, from what I've gathered, what they like to do is they like to take, like, claws from a dinosaur and scare small children with them.
That's the job description.
It's a pretty sweet gig, really. We do actually get to briefly, like, this happens throughout the episode, we do get to briefly see what attacked them, but they're all, like, in the shadows and just walking through frame really quickly. You don't get, like, a full grasp of what they look like. But they're just dudes in spandex, basically.
Yeah, I mean, they look like almost like that ballerina sheer, you know, stuff covering them, and then with a mask on top. But black in color. Yeah. So, like, yeah, instead of, like, the white, like, it's that same material but black.
They're going to go down, back down, and look, I guess, look to see if maybe there are people down there, even though there's no scans of it. Maybe they can go to the scene of the attack and see.
I really like the scanner, by the way. I really like just, like, big, clunky. I like old future technology, you know?
I know, but it makes no sense because you're trying to scan a 3D space and it's just this flat screen with, like, lights on it. And I'm like, how do you even tell, like, what's where in relation to each other? Because
it's just a light bright.
Right. I don't know. I just felt like this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, because they may look like they're next to each other, but if they're on different levels of the cave, then it's not going to be, like, right next to each other, so.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But they pick up, like, brief flares, too. They just, like, flare up for a second and then disappear, because that's the... Well, we're going to learn that they are androids.
But it's absolutely nothing. We're not going to check into this. There's no problems with the machine.
Right? He's like, eh, it's probably just a little glitch. Eh, don't worry about it. You know, it's not like a whole crew just got murdered.
It's like, yeah, people died under mysterious circumstances and the machine's acting funny. It's fine.
Yeah, I'm not going to bother about it. It's probably fine.
Well, and the thing that they also said, like, it can only, like, scan for mammalian life forms. And it's like, this is, like, the far future when they know about aliens and stuff. It's like, wouldn't you want to have it scan for more than that? So that, you know, in case it's not a mammal.
Could be dinosaurs. I mean, that's what's down there.
That's right. It could have been a Silurian story.
Ooh, could have been.
I kind of assumed that it was going to be, like, when they said that.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're very specifically being like, it's like, oh, so the bad guy's going to be lizards then. Like, why else did you specify?
That probably would have tied in a little bit better with the whole dinosaur aspect, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the rare times when one of the big Doctor Who monsters appear and we don't put it in the title. And that was part of what they were going for, was they wanted it to be, like, a big surprise. They didn't want it to be, like, oh, look, even though we pretend it's a surprise, like we do in every Dalek story where we don't show them until the end of episode one, we've got Of the Daleks in the title. And so it's like, why do we even bother holding it back as a surprise?
It could have been Earthshock of the Cybermen.
If Terry Nation wrote it, it would be.
But I'm real glad Terry Nation didn't write it.
That's...
Oof. I got my beef with Mr. Nation.
He wrote one story really well, and so he decided he was going to keep doing that story over and over again.
Exactly. He only didn't do it one time, which was Genesis of the Daleks. And the only reason for that was, they were like, hey Terry, stop writing the same story.
We're begging you.
He's like, oh, okay.
Speaking of older stories, we go on to the TARDIS, and we get, like, a series of references to, like, the past three serials. The Doctor's like, I've been reading this great book, Black Orchid. You should really read it. It's great. It's about a dude that, like, stole stuff from other cultures. It's great.
It's great.
And he wants to tell Adric about it. And also, like, while he's having this whole scene with Adric, he's picking up, like, stuff that's in Adric's room. And I don't know why all of this is here, but there's the Kinda necklace, the, like, DNA thing.
Did he just take that from somebody?
I guess so. And then there's the Grim Reaper-esque mask from the Visitation that the really awesome robot wore. Which, by the way, I was not aware when we watched The Visitation the first time that the Grim Reaper robot wore a mask over its robot face to look more Grim Reaper-ish.
Yeah, but this isn't really out of character for Adric. I mean, our first scene with him is him stealing river fruit, so he's a kleptomaniac.
Oh, good point. Good point. But these are just like little background things, really, because what this scene is really about is Adric is tired of being teased. And he wants the Doctor to spend more time with him. He feels like he's being left out. And then, like, if Nyssa and Tegan have questions, the Doctor answers them, but he won't answer Adric. He's being very teenager-y.
Yep, angsty teen staying in his room. Gets into arguments a lot. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the things that happens. Like, so you guys are used to the John Nathan Turner stuff now because he came in with Tom's last season. But, you know, the show is becoming a lot more self-referential and more aware of its, you know, history and doing references and stuff. But the thing that Eric Sayward brings into it, because he's the writer for this one. He was the writer in The Visitation, and he's going to be the script editor from now on, is that he likes to do character conflict. And so character conflict is going to start being like a big thing of people in the TARDIS arguing. So yeah, I'm not sure it works all the time. And here I got a little... The whiny Adric, I think, wasn't a good look, especially in his last story.
Yeah, I really feel like Adric was fine for a while, and then like really around this season, and he just became so much...
He's just whiny all the time for the sake of having conflict with other people.
Yeah, that is something I'm seeing is, yeah, definitely an increase in conflict, but not necessarily well-written conflict. Just conflict for conflict's sake.
Yeah, I mean, he's trying, like, Sayward's trying to make things more dramatic, and I get that you need conflict, but yeah, there's got to be reason to the conflict, not just having people arguing with each other, because, hey, that sets up some conflict.
It's not really coming from any character place, really. It's
not driven by anything other than a want for more conflict.
But because of this conflict, Adric says that he wants to go home to E-Space. Maybe he'll find Romana, and then they'll tool around doing adventures. But the Doctor thinks this is a bad idea because it would be very difficult to get back there. And they have a bit of a fight.
Well, to be fair, though, I think the way that it's written, or at least the way that it's acted, the Doctor doesn't want Adric to leave. And he's throwing up excuses as far as like, oh, you can't find a CVE because it's random. It's dangerous to go into East. But, you know, all these things is because he doesn't like that it's gone from like zero to I'm leaving the ship, you know, in like 5 seconds. And he's trying to like convince Adric, no, you don't have to go. You know, it's a bad idea.
Everybody leaves me. He gets really annoyed at Adric for wanting to leave and then just goes for a walk in these caves because they've landed in the cave on Earth, which there's a great bit where Tegan's like, where are we? Like, it's Earth. And she's like, oh, no, not again.
Sick of Earth.
Very sick of Earth. But he leaves because he's annoyed at Adric, and Tegan goes to follows the Doctor to talk some sense into him while Nyssa sticks around to cheer up Adric and be like, hey, go ahead and figure out the math of how to get to E-Space. Maybe if you can figure it out, you can just show it to the Doctor and he'll listen to you. And then Adric spends most of the rest of the episode scribbling on a pad of paper and occasionally looking at the screen and going, Doctor.
I didn't think about it until now, but you're right. That pretty much is like the episode for him.
We've set up his conflict And then we don't need him anymore. So things in the cave are not going great. Someone falls and hurts their shoulder after hearing a weird sound. And Kyle freaks out because that was the sound that she heard before they got attacked the first time. And a scanner, that really great scanner, picks up some new life forms. But one of them is picking up very weirdly because it has two heartbeats. Weird. Two hearts that beat as one.
Yes, that's exactly what it means.
They relay this to Lieutenant Scott, and they think that that's the alien that caused the attack, basically. Like, oh, this must be what killed all your crew. So, meanwhile, the doctor, Nyssa, and Tegan, after sort of having their chat about Adric, get distracted by dinosaur fossils and give us a very long sort of lesson about how the dinosaurs died out.
This won't be important later.
No, not at all.
This odd info dump is not important at all to the story.
I didn't think it was going to be, and then when I realized that it was, I was like, oh god, no. I don't know why. I was like very angry about it. I don't know why. I mean, it's fine.
It made you furious.
It did.
And here's the other thing. We were watching it with Chris, and Chris knew it was going to make you furious.
Oh, so you didn't know the manner of Adric's death, just that he was going to die?
Yeah, I did not know how it was going to happen.
And that's,
so there was still
that's
a mystery.
When Joe put it together.
Yeah. It felt like a bad pun somehow. You know that feeling you get when someone does a bad pun? That was the feeling I got when I figured it out.
The thing that's frustrating about this scene is it's, like, so basic, like, everybody knows this, but we have to explain it because this is from another planet, and so it's like, okay, and it's I don't know, it just seems, like, kind of tedious to me.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a callback to, like, remember when we were a science show for kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
But this, it turned out to be a plot point, so. And then the doctor very specifically says, well, they're like, it was an asteroid, and the doctor's like, or maybe it was something else.
Or was it?
I've always meant to go back and find out. Meanwhile, while they're having this sort of history lesson, the woman who hurt her shoulder is being taken back outside by somebody else, and they get lost, and then they get melted. The spandex androids shoot them, and they get grossly bubbly.
Yeah, like, that I think worked really well. And, you know, I told you guys before we recorded, like, I was 6 when I watched this one for the first time. And for me, this was like when Doctor Who, like, suddenly became like, wow, this show is great. There's lots of action. It's, like, kind of, like, a little creepy and scary, you know. Like, this was like Doctor Who is, like, getting more like the movies and stuff that I watch, you know. Yeah, no, that bubble. And they give it, like, that sort of sizzling, like, sound in the background, too, even. And, yeah. And just the clothes, just with all that goop all over them. Mm.
It's incredibly visceral.
Yeah, and there's just, like, bits of pieces in the goop, like a name tag and stuff like that.
Yeah, the stuff that wouldn't melt.
The season's been a little bit gross. Like, it reminded me of the Terralyptal exploding, like, bubbling up in the fire in The Visitation. It's a little gooey and gross this season.
Real gooey.
It's like Sayward, I don't think now, looking back on it, that Sayward is necessarily the show's best writer, but I do think that he, like, wrote it in a way that, like, kids and teens would enjoy the show. Lots of action, lots of soldiers and shooting and stuff, and, you know, like, lots of, like, you know, sort of, you know, gross elements thrown into it, too. So, yeah, I think that he was a good writer for that kind of age demographic.
Yeah, kids definitely like gross stuff. I definitely did. Oh, they even step in the gooey guy. Ugh.
Yeah, they step in and like, oh, what's that? And then they see the name tag in there, like, you know.
That's Carl.
Yeah.
Poor Carl. He was truly the most expendable of our expedition. Eventually, the group, the Scott and his men and Kyle, surround Team TARDIS, the Doctor, Nyssa, and Tegan. And Scott gets very violent with the Doctor and is throwing him around like, you killed our team and probably hid the bodies. Where are the bodies? Even though they just stepped in one. But they are digging around and they, like, find a hatch. And they're like, maybe the bodies are in there.
But does Scott know about the, like, the goopy bodies yet? Because I think that was the group that was sent back up to look for the people that, you know, the person with the hurt shoulder and the person that was helping her. They sent a group back up, and there's also some interference. I can't remember exactly when their communications, like, dies out, but he might not have been aware that they were goop.
Oh, right, yeah. I don't know why they're like, where's the bodies? And they're like, I don't know, let's look around for them. Yeah, like I said, they find a hatch, and when they find the hatch, the androids just come out and are like, hey, leave that alone. And they just start shooting at them.
The androids go, guys, don't touch that.
That's our hatch.
Yeah, something that I was reading mentions the fact that, like, man, like, the special effects involved do not tell you how powerful, like, these weapons are. Because, like, the android, the effect of their weapons in their hands is just, like, a little cap, like, pop. You know, going off, but that, like, melts people. And these soldiers have these, like, loud ray guns with these big, like, you know, lasers that shoot out. It's all very, like, bright and everything. But, like, those don't hurt androids at all. Like, it's just, like, bouncing off of them and stuff. And so, you know, I think that's kind of funny.
I actually, genuinely, it took me a minute to realize that that's where the rays were coming from. I thought it was the other way around when, like, we were first watching. And I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, it's a little backwards.
Yeah.
And then the doctor's like, oh, hey, these are androids, but who is controlling them? And then we get a POV shot of one of the androids, bright red, and it zooms in on the doctor. And then we cut to, it's a Cyberman!
Cyberman! I didn't know.
I thought you saw this one before.
Okay, so here's the thing. I also thought that. And I'm watching this, and I'm like, I don't remember any of this. I don't remember any of this. At all. And I was like, I know how it ends. I have like a very vivid memory of that. And now I'm wondering if I watched the episode after this and it had like the recap.
Well, there's not an actual recap in it. They talk about what happened, but they don't, there's no footage or anything.
I don't know. I only remember like that scene. I was watching this the whole time.
Maybe
like,
you just forgot this entire
I don't know. But like watching it the whole time, I'm like, I swear I thought I watched this one. I don't remember everything that happened except for like the, you know, the big scene that I remember perfectly. In fact, I was kind of like, I kind of thought this, I remembered like the set differently, but that was it. Like, that was the only, like, weird thing. I remembered, like, all the lines and everything. The whole time we were watching this, I was just like, I have no memory of this place.
I mean, to be fair, the Cybermen sort of hang back for a lot of this serial until, like, the last episode or two. Then, before they, like, come out in full force, so it's possible that you're just like, oh, I forgot they were in it.
The reason for that was that at this point they're doing two episodes a week of Doctor Who, and so the Radio Times would have the listings for who was in the first two, and so they held back on having a lot of Cybermen, so that, and then they just billed them as leader and lieutenant, not cyber leader and cyber lieutenant, so that way they were still trying to hide that the Cybermen were the thing in this.
I do always like anytime it's actually a surprise.
Well, and that's the thing, and for all the bad stuff people say about John Nathan Turner now, like, he really cared about, like, the fans, and that's both good and bad. He knew that certain things would be, like, zingers with the fans, and he really tried to set stuff up in ways where it would be like, this is exciting, you know, because that also boosts ratings, but it also, he wanted people to be excited about the show and happy with it, and so he would do this kind of stuff.
I also read something, like, I think there is, like, a small flashback of Adric in the next episode, because they solely put it in there so that they could have Matthew Waterhouse's name in the credits.
Oh.
So,
since you haven't seen it, I can't tell you what that is, but it is not, it's not a reprise of what happens at the end of Earthshock. That's all I'm gonna say, so that, yeah, so I don't spoil what that is. But yes, they did actually have Matthew Waterhouse in the first episode of the next story, just so, yeah, they would hide that he died in this one.
Sneaky.
Oh, what do you guys think about the music on this one?
I don't super remember it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to
There was definitely like a little march. There was definitely a little march theme. Because there's always a march theme with Cybermen. So there's like a like dum 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 sort of.
Yeah, this one, it's kind of like a, it's using unusual instruments that a lot of people comment on. I think it works really well, especially for the Cybermen. It's very metallic in sort of its sounds and everything, and it's a very, very different kind of sound to it, and so, yeah, I was just kind of curious what you guys thought about that. And what do you think of the new design for the Cybermen?
They make mixed feelings.
Me want bread.
What?
They just look like they got bread pans.
Wow, okay.
All right.
Like, they're made mostly out of bread pans.
That is the most interesting reaction I've ever heard.
What?
You know what? I want bread.
I'm just looking at that thing, thinking about bread pans, going, I should bake some bread.
Is that why you baked bread the other day?
Yes!
Oh, all right.
I made beer bread because I was looking at those Cybermen and I was thinking about bread.
Bread shook. I'm always a fan of the sock Cybermen from their very first appearance.
Those are the creepiest ones.
I don't mind. I like these though. I don't like the mouth though. You can sort of see the mouth moving underneath the mask.
I kind of like that.
I don't know.
I like anything that reminds you that there are people in there.
That was the point I was going to make, because that's what makes the 10th Planet Cybermen so creepy, is the body horror. And in the Patrick Troughton stories and in Attack of the Cybermen, they look like robots. There's nothing, I mean, they look very metallic, you know, their faces don't really move, and I don't like that. It's one of the reasons why I'm not a big fan of when the show came back in the new series and what they did with the Cybermen, because again, they look like robots. But this, it's more organic-y, you know, there's a lot of plastic in it, so it move, you know, even their bodies, the way they move and everything, it looks a little more like organic-y, and you can see that mouth in there, so you're reminded, this is a person that's had this done to them. And that makes it just way more creepy.
Yeah, I think that's when the Cybermen work the best, is like any reminder that you're like, there's people inside of that.
Like the newest episode, like I have problems with it, but they had that Cyberman with like the half of his mask was just gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's very good. I think the voice is fantastic too.
Yeah, it was nice to for it not to be so grating.
I can actually understand these guys.
The other great thing is now it's the actual person in the suit doing the voice also. Whereas before they would have people like outside of the set providing voices for the Cybermen, and so this way, you know, the actor can really get into the part because they're speaking their own lines. And so yeah, I think that the guy who plays the cyber leader in this. This one will play the cyber leader in every story from here on through the rest of the classic series. And so he's kind of known as like, he's like the Cyberman guy because he like really gets into it. He even wrote a book about Cybermen in the late 80s because of just how much he started like becoming like, I'm the Cyberman guy.
It wasn't until I rewatched the serial to make GIFs that I realized they all have the little handles, right? Mm-hmm. On the top part of their head. His are black and the rest are not.
Ah,
rest your silver.
He's got fancy handles.
Yeah, he's got fancy handles to differentiate him, I guess, from the rest.
Black Daleks are the leaders. Cybermen with black handles are the leaders. It's a motif. It's like all the alien villains. They, you know, shop at the same stores.
That's actually one of the problems I have with when I have a problem with the Cybermen. It's usually that they're just like, this could have been the Daleks just as easily. Like, I feel like they just turn him into like, it's just a robot army, and it's like, that's less interesting.
Wow, that's the least interesting thing you can do with them.
But here's the thing, all right? Remember, eyes of a six-year-old. This was my first Cybermen story, because I started in the middle of Tom Baker. I was like, these guys are amazing. They can actually go on stairs. It's like, these are the best villains ever.
You know, there is a lot of shots of them going upstairs, too.
I actually have a poster that comes from this series, or the serial, that has them, and the shot is a bunch of Cybermen, like, going down the stairs. So, yeah.
Now what? Your stairs can't protect you.
To be fair, the only Dalek story I saw before this one was Destiny of the Daleks, which isn't the best one. So, you know, my opinion of Daleks was not very high.
My opinion of Daleks isn't very high either, and that's mostly because Terry Nation writes them. But that's the end of episode one. Let's dive into episode two, which I have called Hatched.
Oh.
Oh, okay, nice. Mine is Static Shock.
Oh, nice. You bet you like that one.
I do like that one.
You watched that show, right?
I loved that show. Superhero Static Shock.
Yeah.
What? That's how the theme song goes.
And the Doctor gets a static shock when he's messing with the bomb. So, you know, it works.
That's relevant. When I said hatch, there's two meanings, which is there's the hatch that they're dealing with.
Sure.
But also the Cybermen break free of their confines.
Gross plastic.
Well, yeah, they're first in, like, plastic bags. And then they're in these, like, metal silo things.
My biggest question watching this as an adult is, how did they get the bomb there in the first place? And if they could get the bomb there in the first place, why did they need all this elaborate setup and stuff? Because they can already sneak onto Earth.
That's a good question.
Because I'm watching this going, like, wait a minute. They somehow got the bomb and two androids here already.
I think that is a slight problem with this serial, is that, like, you don't know the motivations for
until
anything
the end.
Until, like, the very end. And then it's, like, one scene where it's like, oh, this is why we're doing it. Like, oh, okay.
It doesn't seem like the serial cares very much. It's not important to them. It's like, don't worry about it. We're doing stuff. They're Cybermen.
Just go with it.
Yeah.
So this episode begins. There's more shootouts. They blow up one of the androids by concentrating the beams on it. And the androids are like, oh no. And they leave. Adric finally decides to join the plot and leaves the TARDIS and winds up in the middle of all of this android craziness. The doctor sees Adric and is like afraid for Adric and realizes that when the androids came when they were messing with the hatch. So he's like, everybody shoot the hatch, and that will cause the androids to leave Adric alone, or maybe just confuse them, because they won't know what to do, whether to attack Adric or protect the hatch.
Well, he's talking about the fact also that the androids know that they can damage them now, and they're programmed to, like, defend themselves also. So it's going to create a conflict on, do we protect the hatch, or do we protect ourselves?
So they start shooting the hatch, they start shooting the androids, and the androids are exploding. Adric hits one with a rock.
Yeah, I love that that's his thing. Like, oh, look, androids. I'll throw rocks at them because that should work.
I wonder if he learned that from the doctor, because the doctor's been known to try to hit somebody with a rock before. Way early on in his career, but still.
Yeah, the first doctor was also known to, like, hit people with his cane a lot. So.
They basically defeat the androids, and they realize that one of the androids was transmitting a signal. So they're going to find out what's in this hatch. The doctor just puts his hand, they blow a hole in the door, and the doctor just, like, shoves his hand in there. Could be anything in there.
Note to anyone listening to this, if you just see, like, a hole in a wall, do not stick your hand in there.
You sound like you know from personal experience.
No, I just know things.
But there could be, like, something that could bite you in there. There could be just used gum.
Consider
we don't know.
This. Could be candy. could be snacks. Could be piles of money.
Yeah, but it's a bomb.
Yeah, it's a bomb.
Sometimes you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah, that's what they try to do, and they have a lot of difficulty with it. Because first they run to the TARDIS to try and jam the bomb by sending, like, blocking the signal, and that works. But then they go back to, like, completely deactivate it, and it turns back on. But then they deactivate it. It's fine. There's a lot of, oh no, it's going to blow up. Oh no, we fixed it. Oh no, it's going to blow up. Oh no, fine. It's fine. We fixed it.
And I love, like, when Nissa's turning up the power in the TARDIS, she's got, like, a screwdriver in her hand and is, like, just, like, turning, like, some little, like, thing inside the console. It's just like, that's so low tech.
And then the doctor's like, I wonder why is a bomb and why it was in this cave. And Adric's like, I don't care. Let's just not think about it and go back to the TARDIS. The Cybermen are watching all of this through, I guess, the android's eyes. And they're, like, they're doing, like, checking up, and they realize that it's the Doctor and stuff. And they pull up a little, like, a diagram of the TARDIS. Or no, they see the TARDIS. That's what it is. They see the TARDIS in the cave. When that happens, the music does the theme song a little bit. But it's, like, a variation on the theme song. But you hear, like, the da-da-da-da. I was very excited. I don't know why. I always get excited when the theme song is in the episode.
I also got very excited.
And then it becomes our John Nathan Turner staple. It's a montage where the Cybermen go through their greatest Doctor Who hits.
That's why my note says, the Cybermen watch Doctor Who repeats. So we get the first Doctor, we get the second Doctor, we get the fourth Doctor, because the third Doctor didn't have any Cybermen serials.
So if we want to put on our tinfoil hats for a moment, you know, because, you know, when people question, like, how did the Cybermen get the bomb in the cave and everything, they shouldn't actually have any scenes of Revenge of the Cybermen, because that actually happens in the future from this one. So there's the whole, like, these are time-traveling Cybermen theory, which then maybe they planted the bomb in the past in the cave because they have a time machine, and then they just waited for it to, like, show up when they needed it to. Because they also seem to know how this conference is going to turn out that they're trying to stop, so people are like, so this is a fan theory that's come up that I think is overly complicated and definitely isn't what the people were thinking when they wrote this, but, you know, you can believe it if you want to.
Yeah, I'm
Doctor
pretty
Who,
sure.
You can believe it if you want to.
I guarantee you the writers are just like, I don't know, just pull some clips from the old episodes.
Right, exactly.
So the Doctor tracks the transmission from the androids or the bomb or whatever, tries to find where these androids came from, the origin of it, and they're going to track it down. Scott and Kyle want to go with, and they're on board the ship, and there's a great bit where they're walking through the TARDIS, and Scott just goes, it's bigger than you think. Man, I'm a sucker for those, like, those classic Doctor Who things done slightly differently. And the Doctor's like, hey, Adric, can I talk to you for a second? And Adric's like, no, I'm hungry. Because that's Adric's character now. He just likes to eat.
He steals things and he eats things. What's not to like?
Sometimes he steals things that he eats. But they have a scene where they apologize to each other for, you know, the Doctor's like, I'm sorry that we had a fight. And Adric's like, that's okay. Then the Doctor's like, I'll help you return to E-Space if that's what you really want. And Adric's like, I even got the math figured out. He's like, but I don't actually want to go back. I was just trying to provoke a response from you, basically. And I think the Doctor, like, hits him in the head with, like, a little book or something. It's kind of cute. Not like, rah, but like a little, ah, you silly Billy.
Was it his hat?
Maybe it was his
hat. That's the thing that I remember about this episode. Is that at some point the Doctor is holding his rolled up hat. I remember just looking at it being like, what is that? What does he have in his hand? And then like a scene or two later,
he unrolls it
and puts it on his head. And Joe and I both at the same time went, oh, it's his hat!
Because he has it in that whole scene with the dinosaur fossils and stuff, and he's, like, using it to mime something crashing into the earth and everything. I was like, it looks like a diploma. I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I don't even know what happened in that scene, because I spent all of it staring at the hat going, what is he holding?
See, that's why he knew so much about the dinosaurs, because he got a diploma. He graduated from college.
Maybe it's his PhD.
Should we talk about the crossover in this story? Do you guys know about this? So you might notice that the cyber leader says excellent a lot. So it's now clear, you know, as any fan of culture, you know, watching or listening to this show would also have seen Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, that they were captured by the Cybermen at some point and converted, which is why the cyber leader's always like, excellent.
I'll allow it.
Okay.
Now we go to a new location. We are on a space freighter where we meet Ringway and Berger. Ringway is a annoying little twerp, and Berger, she just works on the ship, I guess. She's like first mate, I guess. They're worried because there's been recent disappearances on the ship. People have disappeared, and they're worried it's going to lead to an inquiry. Also, like, some of them are worried, not really Ringway, but they're worried that they're going to lose their bonus if things go badly with the fact that people are disappearing. Because the captain of the ship is off talking to people about stuff.
Oh my goodness, I love the captain.
I love the captain too! She is the best part of this whole serial.
She's not like a great person, but no. She's fun to watch. Yes.
She was actually a very well-known actress, and this is another JNT thing that he always tried to get, like, big-name stars into the show. And so, like, yeah, she was a very well-known person over in the UK at that time. And so, yeah, that's why he wanted her in there.
It's just very nice seeing, like, just an old lady in charge of, I don't know, she's, like, in charge of this whole ship, and she's also, like, very cranky, and I like cranky old women. I think that's one of my favorite, like, fiction tropes. Like, I love the Golden Girls, you guys. It's just, I don't know, it's just something inherently funny about cranky old women.
Oh, no! No, I'm just imagining Betty White in that role.
I would be for it. It'd be great.
You know, Doctor Who, the classic series, always has envy of other things. So, like, in the late 70s, you know, they were, you know, Star Wars was the big thing. And so we saw the show trying to imitate Star Wars and doing a very bad job of it in several serials. Now the big movie was Alien. And you can sort of tell the influence in Earthshock. We're now, like, we have this sort of dark, you know, dimly lit freighter, you know, where, you know, things can, like, jump out at you. You can have, you know, you have, like, these crew people that, instead of, like, in the old day, you know, when Doctor Who would have, like, you know, everybody's talking like, yes, we are in the ship and, you know, we are, you know, very determined to do our jobs and everything. Now it's more like, these are just people, right? You know, it's in the future and everything else. They just care about their bonus. They want their money. You know, it's not very sci-fi. It's like, you know, this could be, like, any, like, boat, you know, doing shipping stuff in, you know, in our time, and instead it's just, well, they're in a spaceship instead. So, you know, it's more of that sort of, like, working class, you know, sort of future, and that things don't really change that much culturally. It's just, now we're in the future. And so, yeah, it's sort of a sea change that you're gonna see, like, going throughout, like, the 80s and Doctor Who. And, you know, I think that imitating that style, the show does a really good job with.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you said, like, yeah, they're definitely trying to be, like, Alien, sort of stylistically. But I feel like they wound up being more like Aliens, before Aliens came out, because it's definitely more, I mean, there's like more of a, there's the military aspect to it, and like there's, you know, a lot more shootouts and stuff than there were in Alien. So they're trying to do Alien, but they wind up doing Aliens before Aliens. So that's pretty, it's pretty interesting. The TARDIS arrives on the ship, and the Doctor and Adric sort of go exploring, and they don't run into anyone. No one's around, and the Doctor just keeps wandering around, and Adric's like, why don't we just go back to the TARDIS? Why are we still hanging around here and stuff? And the Doctor just throws his arms wide and goes, I want to announce my presence!
I love that.
It's very good. Also, there's a great line. There's a lot of good lines in this serial. Like, I'm going to be honest. I'm a little iffy on the serial as a whole. But there's a lot of really good dialogue bits because, again, I love that captain. Like, Ringway, the little twerp, is very nervous. And the captain's like, well, then just increase the patrols if you're so worried about all these disappearances. You're starting to bore me. I love her attitude so much.
I was very confused about them when I first watched this when I was a kid, because there's a scene where he says something like, yes, mom, and she says, don't call me mom on the bridge. And as a kid, not knowing that, you know, the British accent, I thought she was his mother. I was like, they're serving on the same ship, but she's his mom. And then later found out, oh, that's how they say ma'am.
I had the exact same problem watching this.
Did you?
This year. So it took me a minute to go, oh, wait, no, he meant, like, that means ma'am. Like, I realized it, like, shortly after it happened. But there was a brief second where I was like, that's his mom?
Because it's pronounced just like we say mom. Like, it's, like, not, there's no difference or differentiation. It's like, yes, mom, you know? It's like, okay.
So then there's just a lot of the Doctor and Adric wandering around. A lot of guards wandering around as well. Eventually, Adric and the Doctor sort of sit down, and then Adric's like, I wonder why no one will show them, because they feel like they're being followed. Adric's like, I wonder why they won't show themselves. And then there are immediately screams. So they go to check it out, and they find a couple of dead guards, and they're like, oh no, this is gonna look bad if someone catches us standing over these bodies. And they stand up, and Ringway has caught them standing over these bodies.
I love that, because the Doctor wants to stay and investigate, and Adric's the one basically like saying, we've gotta go, because this is gonna look bad. It's like, as soon as he convinces the Doctor to stand up, Ringway is just standing there already.
And that is the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called Gold Star.
Oh, no.
I called it Culture Shock.
Ooh, nice. I like that one. So Ringway calls into the captain to say he's apprehended 2 stowaways. And the captain says, apprehended? Why can't he say caught? So melodramatic.
I wonder if it was almost like trying to, like, you know, poke fun at how, like, overblown some of the dialogue could be in, like, you know, some of the older sci-fi stuff. It might not have been, it's just the character, but yeah, I thought that was fun.
Oh yeah, I definitely feel like it probably is sort of a little poking fun. The Doctor and Adric are questioned by the captain. Why are you guys here? And there's one shot where Adric just gets really close to her face. For no reason. Maybe it's just because of the current situation we're all living in. But I was like, personal space, buddy.
That is 6 feet. No, but it did seem to be like way too close.
She says like, somebody's, you know, causing chaos around here. And Adric goes, it's not us. But he like puts his face right next to hers. Like they're looking the same direction too. It's not like he's looking at her. I was like, that's some weird...
That's a weird choice.
Yeah. He does it again later, too. He gets really close to her face a second time. And I was like, is that the director's choice? Is that Matthew Waterhouse's choice? Whoever's choice it was a bad one. But the Cybermen start activating the Cybermen that are hidden aboard the ship. They're fresh in their new plastic. Like, they haven't been opened yet.
Yeah, they were collectibles until they burst out.
Just went down in value.
I know there were a lot of like scared parents watching this because they got letters about, we don't want our kids wrapping themselves in plastic to imitate this. First of all, I don't know where people are gonna have, like, you know, head to foot plastic, but you know. But I do like the look. I think it looks good, like the bursting out and everything. I think that you know, it's kind of sort of reminiscent of Tomb of the Cybermen, but not a whole lot. But you know, I like that sort of thing of, and then realizing that there are 15,000 of those things on the ship, which they say later. And then, like, sort of the thought of, oh crap, they're all Cybermen.
How did they hide so many on the ship?
Ringway was head of security.
Oh, right. Yes, I forgot that Ringway, that little twerp, turned out to be working with the Cybermen. The Doctor actually tells the captain about the bomb on Earth and that it was controlled from this ship. And she's like, nuh-uh. He's like, yeah, huh? And there are these power surges, and the Doctor says it's from whoever was in control of the androids and the bomb, and they need to figure it out. And hey, maybe trust me. We cut back to the TARDIS, which has Nyssa, Tegan, Kyle, Scott, and his men. They're all just hanging out in the TARDIS. And Nyssa seems very reluctant to join the plot. She keeps being like, they're like, let's go out and do things. And she's like, no, we need to stay for reasons. Like, this is the second serial where she's been like, I don't want to leave the TARDIS, really. I think we should just stay here. She did that in The Visitation, and she's doing it here as well. And I'm wondering if it's just the writers like, there are too many companions, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, this was the problem that they addressed. I mean, because that was the thing, like, they got rid of a companion just because the writers had no idea what to do with three companions.
Clearly. And I feel like because of that, they sort of shortchanged Nyssa a lot. Like, Nyssa's always, like, because there's, Kinda, she's just not in it. The Visitation, she hangs out on the TARDIS a lot. This one, she just hangs out on the TARDIS a lot. Like, I made GIFs for this, and I didn't have hardly any GIFs of Nyssa, because there was nothing interesting to GIF.
Yeah, because the original idea was actually that they were going to get rid of Nyssa, because they didn't have so much for her to do. But it was actually Peter Davison that convinced John Nathan Turner that Nyssa should stay, because he's like, she's the only one that actually wants to be on the TARDIS. You know, it's like, Adric's always whining about something, Tegan wants to get back to Heathrow. He's like, no, like, you can get rid of either of the other two, but not Nyssa.
So they're like, the warp drive is messed up. They're using it, and like, they're like, we need to turn it off because it's messing stuff up. But the captain doesn't want to turn it off because she wants to get her bonus. And if
they gotta get there,
And if they don't get there, they don't get their bonus. And that's the most important thing. The most important thing is the economy, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
People's lives.
Yeah, not important.
Man, who knew that 80s Doctor Who would be so culturally relevant right now? After we had the plague and the Visitation, and this one. So that's what I'm saying to all of you who don't watch Classic Who. Watch it! It's relevant!
It's relevant!
Well, yeah, but she also only thinks that there are just a handful of Cybermen on board at this point. So she thinks, yeah, once we get to where we're going, we get some soldiers in here, mop up these Cybermen, and then we can still get paid for our cargo. It's gonna be fine.
Yeah, but they need to flatten the curve, really. So Scott, his men, and Tegan are going to leave the TARDIS, but Nyssa and Kyle are going to stay in the TARDIS because they don't want to join the plot. So they sort of go around and are trying to find their way. There's a great bit where I'm liking Tegan more and more because she's very self-deprecating. Because she's like, I want to go with you, I want to go. And then they get lost, and Tegan's complaining about being lost. She's like, we'll never find the Doctor. And Scott's like, you said you wanted to come. And she's like, I know, I'm just a mouth on legs. There's good dialogue in this one.
There is very good dialogue in this one.
I also like that she gets super butch in this and just, like, grabs a cyber gun at one point and just shoots a Cyberman.
Yeah, like, everybody gets to kill at least one Cyberman.
It's like Keegan in Sigourney Weaver mode.
I was super... Scott's very weird about it, though. He's like, they get one of them and he's not fully down, and she just runs up, shoots him, like, point blank. And Scott's like, hey, don't just run into a situation like that. And she's like, I don't care. I'm a boss.
I'm Australian. That's not a gun. This is a gun.
Ringway sort of set up a barricade because they know something's coming. And then we finally see it's the Cybermen. The Doctor sees the Cybermen on the screen. And the camera dramatically zooms in on his face. And he says, Cybermen.
I think Peter Davison does a great job of conveying horror at the sight of the Cybermen. You know, like, he does a really, there's a scene later also that I think he does a good job with this of just like, they do make it like a sort of over dramatic thing of the zoom in and the music and everything, but like, him just going, Cybermen, like, you can see in his eyes, like, there's like fear there, and I thought that was really good.
There's another shootout, it's on stairs. And the Cybermen are like, we have no problem with this. And just they get the upper hand, and they are beating these people very, very soundly. And then this is when Ringway turns on the captain and reveals that he's working with the Cybermen.
I'm sorry the way you said it. This is when Ringway turns on the captain.
Oh, no, not like that. Sorry. That's his mother.
I knew what you meant. Sorry, the way that I don't know why the way you said the sentence just sounded like the emphasis was not right. Hey, Captain.
Oh, sorry. Ringway, is that a gun in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me? No, he reveals that he is working with the Cybermen and that he is bad. That's what I mean. Not the other thing.
I need to do a security check on you, Captain. Gonna frisk you.
The doctor says, what are they paying you? I bet it's not gold. It's not gold, because Cybermen don't like... They're, like, real allergic to gold. I'm not saying this very pointedly for any reason. And Adric takes his gold star and is like, but Ringway catches him and is like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, just fiddling with my star. And then the captain gets to be a badass and she karate chops Ringway. She goes, "Hiya!" right in his neck, and he collapses.
I see, the thing that's funny to me is, like, I don't think you would ever, because it's painted blue, ever suspect that Adric's thing was... The fact that he grabs it from his shirt is the whole reason anyone would be suspicious, because... It does not look like gold at all.
It's only gold outlined or something, right?
Yeah.
But they lock the Cybermen out, and then this is when they realize there was like 1,500 Cybermen on board, something like that. There's a whole bunch of silos that they're hidden in, and they're like, oh no, this is bad. They've sort of taken control of the... They're locked off in this control room. Ringway has been defeated, but Ringway wakes up, and the captain has another great line, because she's disappointed that Ringway woke up, and she's like... I had a great epitaph for him. Love her so much. So the Cybermen start trying to burn their way into the room. They're like, they put a big gun against the wall and the wall glows red. It's a very bad effect too, because when they shove the gun, it looks like they just took a still frame of the gun against the wall. Definitely not live footage. It's just like a picture. It looks real weird.
It's easier for them to do the effect that way because it's static.
And meanwhile, the doctor gets to work on stabilizing the shield so that they can keep the Cybermen out. The Cybermen's like, the door has been heated up enough that you can just punch through it. So the Cyberman punches through the wall and gets halfway through it. And then the doctor turns the shield thing on. The Cyberman is just Han Solo'd in the door. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's fused into the door now. So, like, it's a cyber door.
Do you think he's still alive in there? Just like, hey guys, I'm just kind of stuck here.
No, I figured that it was like he was basically cut in half, but just his two halves are sticking to the door.
Ugh, gross. I want to live in a world where he's just like, now he's just a talking door. I guess it doesn't matter because eventually the ship's going to explode. One of the Cybermen that got shot by Scott and Tegan and all that had gotten away, and he's crawling around the ship injured and bleeding, and he sort of falls down dead in front of the cyber leader, and they're like, Ringway said there was only like 10 people on board and we took care of all of them, they're all accounted for, so who hurt this Cyberman? And they're like, oh, there must be more people on board and Ringway lied to us. So they blow a hole in through another door, and then they get into the control room with the doctor and everybody.
I like this because it's showing like the Cybermen being smart. It's like, yeah, there are two ways into the bridge and we had plans for each direction. So that way, you know, like if the doctor's like stopping us in one way, we're getting in the other way while he's worrying about that. So I thought that was good.
Yeah, they sort of have a lot of like backup plans because they have like the bomb on Earth was a plan and they already had a backup plan in case that didn't work. But he's like, so we meet again, Doctor. And then he goes up to him like he's going to shoot him with his gun. And he turns and shoots Ringway. And they're like, whoa, why?
I really like this also because of just how ineffectual the Doctor seems. Like, again, showing the terror of the Cybermen. Because the Doctor's just like, no, wait. Like, you know, like, he's trying to come up with what do I say to, like, make this not happen as the gun is going up and it looks like he's going to be shot. And again, I think it really sells, like, how, like, terrifying the Cybermen are that the Doctor doesn't have, like, something where he can just weasel out of this right away.
He's been bad at weaseling out since becoming five, I feel like.
Five's bad at weaseling.
He's just not as weaselly. But the reason they killed Ringway is because they think that Ringway lied about the amount of people on board and that he can't be trusted, so they kill him. The Cybermen say, hey, we're going to destroy the Earth because we don't like it. They'll explain why in the next episode.
Guys.
But yeah, Earth's just bad. No one likes it. So, and then like more Cybermen burst out of the silos, and then it's just tons of Cybermen. And that is the end of episode 3. And we're now into episode 4, the last one, which I have called The Death of the Dinosaurs. And also Adric.
Oh no!
I called it traumatic shock.
Oh, nice. So the reason the Cybermen are planning, they're going to crash the freighter into the Earth to disrupt a conference that is uniting militaries to defeat the Cybermen. That's what the bomb is supposed to be. It's supposed to blow that. Like, everybody's gathering on Earth, and they're going to blow it up so that no one can mess with the Cybermen. They'll be like, oh no, the Cybermen are scary. Leave them alone.
Well, it's supposed to do, like, two, like, things. Like, it not only is going to destroy the conference, but also, by destroying a whole planet, the Cybermen are basically making a statement of, this is how powerful we are. You know, don't mess with us.
Meanwhile, Tegan has sort of broken off from Scott and his men, and she's gone rogue. She's gone full-on Sigourney Weaver.
I do like that in order, like, when she goes with this group. She gets to the, like, outfit first.
Oh, right, yeah, she takes Kyle's outfit.
That's, like, her first priority is, like, hey, give me that outfit, I'm gonna go with them.
There's no real reason.
It's a little more practical than the skirt and heels for the stewardess outfit, I think.
I guess.
Kyle
gets a change of outfit, too. I guess she takes one of Tegan's outfits. She gets that, like, weird button-up thing.
Very convenient that they're the same size, although you can tell by looking at them, they're really not.
Right. Like, Kyle is way taller than Tegan.
But it's fine. Their clothes just fit each other. It's fine.
It's TV logic.
It's like Austin Powers. You ever see where they, like, beat up the people who are, like, so, like, different in size, and they come out of the room and they're wearing the clothes and they're perfectly fitting?
I love those kind of jokes. So, but Tegan is caught by a Cyberman, but Scott and his men get back to the TARDIS, but a Cyberman follows them in, and then they shoot him, and another one tries to get in, and that one shoots Kyle. Kyle gets dead.
Aw.
Honestly, when I watched it, I forgot who she was. It wasn't until rewatching it, I was like, oh, she's the person for the expedition. Okay.
She, like, changed outfits, and you were like, who's this?
Yeah.
So Tony can't tell faces and you can't tell clothes.
Exactly. She was shot from behind, so I didn't see her face. So I was like, I don't know.
There's a continuity error with these scenes, because the soldier that's grabbed on the outside is not the same one that, like, inside the TARDIS, it's a male soldier that's missing. But outside the TARDIS, it's a female soldier that was grabbed. So, like, in all the scenes outside, when you see Scott and his crew, like, the woman is missing. But inside the TARDIS, she's there, and it's one of the guys that's missing.
I didn't even notice that. To be fair, they're all in it. Like, all of his people are, like, very interchangeable. There's no development for any of the...
A lot of characters.
Yeah, they're just military.
Yeah, the guy with the most personality was the guy on the scanner, and they didn't take him with them, so, you know.
Because he's useless.
Right.
Something bad happens and he's like, eh. Nissa gets a little sad that Kyle has passed away because they had like two scenes together. Meanwhile, Tegan is brought to the control room with the doctor and everything. The doctor runs up to her and stuff, and then the cyber leader says, who is this? And the doctor's like, no one of consequence. And Tegan's like, thanks a lot.
It's not like I already have a complex about it or anything.
And then, like, a really good scene happens. I really enjoy this scene. The doctor starts, you know, yelling at the Cybermen about how great emotions are, really. Sort of bickering back and forth about it. The doctor, at one point, calls Tegan a friend.
Aww.
And then, because he's like, is this...
Really upgraded.
Yeah, from just minor annoyance on the TARDIS to friend. But because he calls Tegan a friend, the cyber leader says, kill her. And the doctor waits a second too long, I think. He, like, looks back and forth, and then he runs in front of Tegan and is like, don't do it.
Well, you know, he's doing a little mental math. I've got three companions. That big of a deal.
Which one do I like the least? If only there's some way I could get rid of Adric. Oh, well, I'll just save Tegan. He jumps in front of her, and the Cyberman is like, now I have control over you. I can make you do whatever I want, because you will want to protect your friend. You want to protect Tegan. I really like that scene. I thought that was good. That's a way of utilizing, like, the Cyberman's lack of emotions. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Right. No, I agree with that, because, yeah, too many times, like, you know, when they first appeared, they were like this. But then too many times in, like, the Patrick Troughton stuff, they were just faceless soldier monsters. They're just, like, marching and shooting, and, like, there's no real personality to them. And so it's good to have that be, like, their thing, is it's like, no, like, you know, this is a weakness, you know, and this is something that, you know, we're against, and you can be like us and all that kind of stuff. That's the Cybermen. And that, I think, is why this sort of, like, 80s reinvention of the Cybermen works really well.
Other than the captain, that's probably my favorite thing in this serial, is that scene of just, I have control over you now because I don't have emotions, but you do. So the Cybermen are going to leave in the TARDIS and let some crew stay on and feel some fear. And they're going to leave a couple of Cybermen behind to observe them feeling fear so that they can figure out how humans work and how they can better exploit them in the future.
Oh, I thought it was just because it made him horny.
Well, that's the subtext.
Wow. Yeah, no, but yeah, there's this whole thing about, yeah, they're saying, like, we must understand humans if we're going to defeat the humans and stuff like that. So, yeah. I mean, it's really sadistic. And I think they even say, I think Tegan says that it's sadistic, and the Cyber Leader says, no, scientific.
That's another thing that I liked. And then the scene happens that would have completely tipped me off that bad things are about to happen for Adric. Because Adric says he will stay behind. The Cybermen say that he should stay behind. And the Doctor's like, no, he's going to come with us. And then Adric's like, no, I'll stay behind. It's fine. And then he shakes the Doctor's hand. And he tells Tegan goodbye and that he'll see her soon. And when he says, I'll see you soon, like, it's like a very wide shot where he's just alone in the frame looking kind of dopey. And I was like, that is ominous as heck. So, yes, something's going to happen to Adric. So, if I didn't know that Adric was going to die, I would at least thought he was leaving. And if I didn't know which episode he died in, at this point I'd be like, oh, it's this one.
Yeah, so the thing that I have a problem with, though, is that for the Cyber Leader, this is pretty dumb. Because he doesn't know about Nyssa. And so you would think he'd want, like, a second companion there so that he could actually kill one of them if the Doctor acts. Because, you know, the problem with having one hostage is that you can threaten killing them to make the person do something, but if the person digs in and says, no, I'm not gonna, you kill your hostage, but then it's like, what else do you use as leverage? You know, if you have two hostages, then you actually can say, like, okay, I actually will kill this one, and now I'm gonna threaten the other one. You know, so that's, I don't know, I thought that was kind of dumb, but they wanted to write Adric out, so.
So, everyone leaves, and Adric starts to plan, basically. He's like, we gotta figure out a way to stop this. Scott bursts in and saves the cap, because the captain is also there. Captain and Berger and Adric.
After I've been saying the Cybermen are so great in this one, this scene, though, is really ridiculous. Because, okay, Scott catches the first Cyberman by surprise and blows it away. But there's another one right around the corner on the door. And it waits until Scott actually walks into the bridge to even start lifting its gun. So he's able to spin around and shoot it before it's even ready. Like, you would think, like, oh, somebody shot, you know, Cyber Dave. I'm going to have my gun ready. And as soon as the person comes through the doorway, I'm going to shoot them.
God, Cyber Dave was a riot, too.
Aw, man, no one ever thinks about the loss of Cyber Dave. But, He comes in and they basically retake the control room so that Adric can sort of math some stuff out. He's got to solve some logic codes. Meanwhile, the TARDIS is following the freighter from a distance so that the Cybermen can watch the destruction happen from there. And also they can watch, the Doctor can watch, you know, and they can get some enjoyment out of watching his pain. And then there's a scene where Tegan's like, hey, this is bad. What are we doing? And then she runs up and smacks a button on the TARDIS console, and then everything tips over, and the Doctor's like, what are you doing? They can kill us.
Oh, and didn't the Cyber, because two of them come in, I think it's the leader and the lieutenant, go into the TARDIS, and the leader tells the lieutenant to make sure and walk through the rest of the TARDIS to see if there's anybody else hiding. So there's only one of them in the console room, which is important.
I do, yeah, kind of remember thinking it would be great if, like, that Cyberman just didn't come back. Right, like, and, like, the episode ended, and then, like, episodes and episodes later, there's just, like, a Cyberman on the TARDIS, and everyone's like, how did he get in? And there was, like, a flashback to, like, everyone forgot.
Right, yeah, because he's just exploring the TARDIS, and it's, like, so big that he just can't find his way.
And, like, the story ended on this serial, and everybody was like, great, we did it! And just forgot about, like, the one that's, like, wandering around in, like, the cloister room or something.
Cyber Steve.
You know, there's still a Centauran wandering around in there from Invasion of Time that everyone forgot about. If you count the Centaurans that go in, like, there's one unaccounted for.
Excellent.
Yeah, I like to think he's still lost inside the TARDIS somewhere.
I want to write that
episode. Isn't that, like, the perfect start to, like, an episode where there's just a Santar in there, and it's like, how did you get in? And he's like, oh my god,
people.
I found my way back!
You had curly hair the last time I saw you.
That'd be great.
He does come back,
this
though.
Is probably a big finish. Adric's working on stuff. He gets some things done. Then Berger presses a button, and the freighter tilts. We get the TARDIS tilts and the freighter tilts. I gift both of those, and they sync up really nicely when they're put side by side. But the freighter starts fading. Like, Adric has somehow caused it to jump out of time. Like, the problem is it's still locked onto Earth. It's still heading towards Earth, but it's going backwards in time. And he's having difficulty because, like, the cyber leader's like, you must follow it. And he's like, I can't lock onto it because it's, like, coming in and out. It's being a big problem. Adric gets two codes down, and they come out of warp drive, and the Earth looks like a gumball.
I guess.
And I realized why that is. It's probably like, I was like, why it doesn't look super like Earth is because it's like prehistoric Earth, right?
Yeah, there's nothing there yet.
Oh, so were you seeing like the DVD special edition version that had the different effects?
Oh no.
I didn't.
Because yeah, no, I mean, one of the criticisms of this one is that like the Earth doesn't look, you know, like in the regular edition, it doesn't, like the one that was broadcast, it looks just like modern day Earth, like the continents aren't in different places or anything. It's like, it's standard. So, like, just our planet.
I very specifically didn't look at the special edition one, because we did that accidentally with Kinda, and I was very upset.
No, yeah, because you didn't get the primitive snake in all its glory.
We went back and watched it,
which was the right choice.
But yeah, this is supposed to be 65 million years in the past, but like they're showing like Asia and everything like the way it looks now, like when they're going to crash into the Earth, like it's not all clumped together.
So Adric desperately wants to try to, because they've like went back in time and they've done like this thing. He's like, one last thing to do, and maybe he can shift it, right? He can get it to avoid the Earth.
Well, yeah, because there are, like, three different, like, it's, like, one device, but there are, like, three different, like, segments to the device, and you got to crack the code for all of them, and he doesn't know, like, how much they can affect the ship with each code that he breaks, so they keep trying every time to, like, shift it away, and it's, you know, they get through the first two, and it's not allowing them to change the course.
So he wants to work on the third one, but they're like, we need to get out of here. They get Adric to leave with them. And they're all in the elevator. And he's like, oh no, wait, I got it. And jumps out of the elevator right as the doors close.
That's actually an escape pod.
Yeah, the escape pod. Yeah, that's what I meant. I see those doors and just think elevator. But yeah, it's an escape pod. And they shoot off. And then I think they call into the TARDIS and say Adric's not with them at some point. Also, the doctor is explaining to Tegan and Nyssa at this point, like, this is we are back in time. Everything's fine. This is what's supposed to happen. This is, remember that meteorite or whatever it was? It's this. It's the freighter. The freighter is what's going to crash into the Earth and kill the dinosaurs.
Yeah, because it's full of antimatter. So once it crashes, that's what creates such a big explosion, is it wasn't a giant rock. You know, it's just this freighter, but because of all the antimatter, it's going to make a huge explosion.
And the Cyberman gets really mad about this and is going to kill the doctor. But Tegan grabs him and wrestles him a little bit. And then the doctor grabs the Cyberman and shoves Adric's gold star into his little chest plate.
It crumbles pretty easily.
But this, I think, was brilliant. Because, you know, to give Adric or something of Adric's to be, like, the weapon that he uses. You know, like, I thought that was a really nice touch. And being the thing like that, this is what lets us defeat the Cyberman.
The Cyberman is like, I can't breathe! Oh, too much gold! And he starts shooting the place up a bit, shoots the console. And then the doctor grabs a gun and just lets it go. Just shoots him like 50 times right in the chest.
He never would, though.
He never would.
The doctor doesn't use guns. Never, ever.
Like, he's shooting him and like the Cyberman slinks to the floor and he's still going. Just pushing it right into his chest as he's laying there on the ground. Dead.
Stop. He's already dead.
They tried to contact Adric. But they can't because the TARDIS console's all been shot up and it's not working properly. And meanwhile, there's been we kept cutting to like a shot of a Cyberman on the freighter who's been like damaged and he's crawling his way somewhere. And then he eventually gets into the control room with Adric and shoots the controls. Then just makes the most terrifying death noise and dies. It's just like, and then he dies. It was awful. I hated it so much.
Yeah, but then Adric gets his immortal line, now I'll never know if I was right. Because he was just saying, like, I've got it, as the thing shoots the thing, so he was about to crack that third code.
Honestly, things would have been fine if he just left.
Yeah.
Like, him staying behind doesn't accomplish anything.
It doesn't get to feel like a heroic sacrifice?
No, not really. It just seems like, that was a dumb move.
Yeah.
Oh, also, that Cyberman does come back and Nyssa shoots it because she didn't get to shoot one. They're like, oh, right, Nyssa didn't get to shoot one. Let's throw this one in here.
Well, now that we're down to two companions again, Nyssa can, like, just, like, come to life. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I've got a purpose.
I can do things now. But Adric is standing there. He's holding his little rope that he got from his brother in his first serial. And
it's a cute little callback.
Yeah. And he looks sad, and then he explodes. And then
Cedric.
Hashtag Cedric.
Dedric is what I...
that one doesn't...
It visually works. It doesn't work audio-wise.
No, it does not.
The Doctor and Nyssa and Tegan are all very sad about this, and they... The Doctor's just, like, in shock. He doesn't say anything. I think Tegan says some things. She's very angry at the Doctor.
The Doctor is in shock?
The Doctor is in earth shock.
Yeah, like, all the Doctor does is close the scanner and, like, yeah, like, he's just staring dumbfounded.
And then we cut to the credits, which there's no music, and it's just the remains of the...
crumpled up star! What a, like, terrible... heartbreaking image.
Yeah. Now, again, 6 years old, watching this, I call this traumatic shock for a reason. Because you never expect a main character to die. And it, like, every time, like, so I watch stuff with my daughter sometimes, and she's like, well, we know that none of the main characters, like, nothing's going to happen to a main character. She's always doing that. I'm like, you never know. You never know. Some shows do this, you know? So, yeah, like, I never, you know, I'd seen some companions come and go and all that. But, yeah, to have one die and then to have that just silent sort of thing, it's just like, you know, what just happened? So, yeah, no, it's dark and I love it.
This is the first companion to die since... Katrina. Oh,
Katrina, that was her name.
No, Sarah Kingdom.
If you count Sarah Kingdom. I don't super count Sarah Kingdom. Oh my god. She was only in one serial.
I don't count Sarah Kingdom either. Sarah Kingdom's a side character. A great side character.
Yeah.
Who I love.
Yeah.
She was in more episodes than Katarina.
More episodes, but not more serials. And that's the difference. I'm sorry, it's arbitrary, but it is.
Okay. I mean, there are some people that don't count either one of them. Like, I was reading a thing,
mean,
like,
that's fair.
Adric's the first real companion that died, you know, like, okay, all right, however you want to draw your lines.
But still, it's definitely been since the first Doctor.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's it. That's the end of Earthshock. And we are all Earthshook.
We've all been Earthshaken.
Not Earthstirred. Gonna take a quick break. And we will be back for final thoughts.
What's new on the 42cast? Let's ask my co-hosts.
We're talking about Doctor Who.
Comic book shows and movies.
And we're talking about all things Star Trek.
And so much more.
Check us out on Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
It's only on the 42cast, your ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything.
So Nathan, when are we finally talking Babylon 5?
And we're back! Tony, do you know what time it is?
No, I don't here. Hang on, let me pull it up real quick. It is 50 minutes past 3 o'clock.
Uh-huh. What time is it in the podcast?
You could actually, if you hate the bit so much, you could start at that question.
Yeah, I could just say it's time for final thoughts. I could just
you
skip
could,
you entirely.
You feed into
I
it
feel
every
like
time.
I want to include you, and like this is the only enjoyment you get out of the podcast anymore. So, I'm going to let you do your bit.
You know what?
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And because I appreciate that, I will let you know that it's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Nice. Nathan, what are your final thoughts?
It's hard to divorce, you know, what I felt like as a 6-year-old watching this, but I love this one. I think that it is fantastic. I am a fan of movies like Aliens, and, you know, I like that sort of, I like that it's more action-y, you know, I like that, you know, the Cybermen are given a character again after so long where they were just faceless sort of robots. Even in Revenge of the Cybermen where, yeah, the one Cyberman talks a little bit. There's not a lot of real, like, purpose to what they're doing. We're going to destroy Voga because it's gold. Whoop-de-doo. You know, this, having that discussion with the Doctor, it works really well. It's also sort of like modernizing the series and its sensibilities, you know, depicting the future in a way that looks more lived in and with characters that are more just of, hey, I'm just trying to get my paycheck kind of thing, rather than the sort of more old-fashioned, overblown sci-fi. So I think there's a lot of good things in this one. There are definitely some plot holes in it. It is not a perfect story, but they knew what they were doing. They wanted to make the Cybermen an actual surprise. That works really well. You know, as a kid, I didn't know the Cybermen were going to show up. I didn't even know what Cybermen were. And that, like, worked really well as sort of, like, their introduction to me. And a lot of people at the time wouldn't have known either because they hadn't been in the show for, like, 9 years. And the other thing was, you know, Adric's exit. Again, surprising to me. You know, I think they did a really good job of foreshadowing, you know, for people who, you know, are able to, you know, now that I'm older, I can see the foreshadowing and everything, but actually giving Adric some stuff, you know, and putting his character more in the forefront and all of that. And then that final bit and the roll to credits of just that complete silence and just looking at the star is properly, like, traumatic. And gives it that sort of, like, oomph of, like, it really hits you in the guts. So, yeah, I like this one a lot.
Nice. Tony?
Yeah, I think what's really weird about this one is how much, like, we've kind of talked about it on the podcast before, as it, like, standing out as one of the episodes that I remember watching before I was, like, properly watching Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. When I was just like, I'll pull up whatever on Daily Motion and, like, watch an episode of a serial. Like, that's kind of how I was watching it. And, like, this, I remember, like, watching this one and it having, like, such a... Because you're not expecting, you know, main characters to die. And it's very traumatic when it happens. Like, the credits and the crumpled up star and the silence. So you're just like, oh, dang. That happened and it's permanent and it's forever. It was, like, very upsetting. And then going back and watching this one, I was, one, surprised by how much I did not remember at all. I think it is actually possible that I just watched, like, the fourth episode.
Or maybe even just that Adric dies.
Yeah, I don't.
Video on YouTube.
Or just the scene on YouTube. Like, the way in which I was watching him, it was, like, was that random. It's possible. And it's totally interesting, like, seeing the development of Adric's character. Because, like I said, I watched that, was very sad. And then it was like, oh yeah, everybody fucking hates that guy. And, like, we cheered when he died. And I was like, what? How could you? And then, like, you know, he was introduced and I was like, he seems fine. And then I think really a lot of it comes from, like, that need to have a conflict.
I do really quick want to put in there, though, and this is something that I think is true. For people who are younger watching Doctor Who with Adric, Adric's our guy. So it's a little bit different from adults watching Doctor Who where he's the whiny kid, because I think a lot of kids watching the show, it's like Wesley Crusher in Next Generation, if you ever seen Star Trek, where, like, a lot of people hate him. But when I was a kid watching Star Trek Next Generation, I liked Wesley. He was cool because he was a kid that was on the ship. And so, yeah, I think it's a little bit of a different thing depending on what age you were when you saw this.
Yeah, I have to say, I was definitely, like, not a kid when I was doing this. I was probably, like, 17, 18.
Still younger.
Yeah, still definitely younger, but old enough to think that I'm an adult. So, yeah, it was bizarre to kind of have those, like, two radically different contexts for this same
moment,
yeah. So, there's a lot of stuff that I really like in this. I really like that. I think, Nate, I think you called it, like, lived in. That, like, future tech, but it's old and crummy and, like, not exciting anymore. I love that. I love that kind of technology. I love those kinds of settings. I really liked the captain. I thought she was, like, a great, really engaging character. I was worried when there was kind of, like, a gap between when we watched this one and when we're recording it now, and I was like, I'm worried I won't remember a lot because I don't feel like, besides, like, the main thing, I don't feel like there's a lot to remember. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like, my big takeaway is that, like, that last episode is, like, really good and is, like, a really, like, impactful moment, and then, like, the rest of the serial is, like, it's okay. I enjoyed, like, it held my attention enough. Which isn't bad, necessarily. I think every once in a while we end up saying that on the podcast. because you can only be like the most excited so many times.
Yeah, I agree. I think like the last episode is definitely the best episode of the four. I think structurally this one is kind of messy. Like we spend so much time not knowing what the Cybermen are up to. They don't really do a whole lot initially. It's not until like episode 3 when they fully swing into gear, and it's not even until episode 4 that we know what their plan is. And I feel like there's a lot of filler here and there of just wandering around caves or wandering around the ship, that sort of thing. So, like, I feel like the pace could have been a little bit better here and there. But, like, there are some, like, really good standout scenes in it. Like,
yeah, I think you were saying, you were doing, like, the GIFs. And while we were watching it, I remember you being like, a couple of episodes are kind of nothing. And then you're, like, doing the GIFs and you were like, oh, that's a good line. That's a good scene. That's a good line. And it ended up making, like, way more than you realized.
Yeah, I made over 100 GIFs for this one, so... I do think, as good as the last scene is with Adric, I feel like it might have been a little bit better if it happened earlier, because I feel like there's been a segment of this season specifically that has made me like Adric less. Not just because he's whiny, but more because he's kind of... the misogynistic stuff, like, bugged me. Because he never really was like, ooh, girls, until this season.
That's true.
Like, he was fine with Romana and stuff like that. It's just this season that he's been, like, weird about that. And that, like, immediately, like, soured me on him a little bit. But, like, I don't know. So, I feel like, out of the three companions that we could have gotten rid of, I feel like Adric is kind of the easiest one to get rid of because people don't like him as much. I mean, it doesn't take away... I think it might have been stronger if it had been somebody else or if it had been Adric. If this had happened to Adric before, they kind of, like, messed around with his character a little bit. But having said that, I still don't think it, like... It's still tragic, and it's still sad. I do wish that him jumping back into the ship had resulted in something a little bit more. I wish he had done something before dying. Because, like, as it is, it feels like he made a bad choice and now is dead.
Hey, his star saved the Doctor. That was his heroic thing. He gave
but
an
he
item
had to
another
to
person.
Do with that.
He gave an item to another character. Oh no, that was in his goodbye. He palms it to the Doctor as he's saying goodbye to the Doctor. So he did do that.
Yeah, but he could have still done that and got on the escape pod and been fine. Like him getting off the escape pod, I feel like should have led to something. But as it is, it feels almost like
that was dumb.
Yeah.
Well, who knows? Maybe Adric being in the freighter was important to the development of the human race. That's what I've been saying. There's a little Adric in all of us.
Oh, God. Yeah, just his he kick-started human evolution. We're all descended from Adric.
Right, we're all descended from Adric. That's right. He's actually one of the most important characters in the series.
If that's true, are we eventually going to evolve into like these like weird Black Lagoon creatures? Is that what's going to happen? Because that's what happens to Adric's race in whatever that one was called. I can't remember the name of it.
Full circle.
Yeah, full circle. But there's parts I enjoyed and parts that I thought were dragged. But yes, the end is, you know, iconic. And I liked the little, you know, him holding up the rope. I like the little callbacks. I know some people get annoyed at like how self-referential it starts to get this season, but I kind of dig those little things as long as they're not like just entirely pointless. Like sometimes it's just in the background and that's fine. I think maybe the scene with the Cybermen watching all of the repeats is maybe a little, but I don't mind because I'm like, hey, it's my good old boys. They're back. But, but yeah, so I think it's a little bit of a mixed bag. There's some like great stuff and there's some stuff that's a little wobbly. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag, but I didn't dislike it. So that's my final thoughts.
We did it.
Before we go, is there anything that you would like to plug?
I am the host of the 42 cast, like I think has been mentioned. So we cover all sorts of different subjects with a different cast of people every week. Joe and Tony have both been on the show before. So, you know, give it a listen.
Spoon! Dune.
Yes, yes. I just released it. We actually recorded the Tick one quite a while ago because I'm awful about releasing stuff. Because I record too much and then I have to make decisions. And so, yeah. But, yeah, we did a Tick one fairly recently that we released. And, yeah, no, it's just, yeah, I mean, while you're quarantining and lockdown, you know, it's another thing that you can do. Listen to my show. And it's a lot of fun.
Tony, is there anything you want to plug? I know you want to.
Watch my TV show. Well, you can watch Unseen World. You can stream it online. I always forget the URL and I always make you tell me.
WatchHeartlandTV.com.
WatchHeartlandTV.com. You can also watch it on demand. I mean, you can stream it on demand there. You can stream it on demand on the Roku through the Heartland Network app. I think we're on Fire Stick and Apple TV and stuff now. Ah, there's about, I think, 13 episodes up. All about different travel locations.
So you can check them out while you can't actually go to them.
While you can't go anywhere, you can learn the history of places you can't go to.
It's like you get a little travel. You get to do a little traveling in the comfort of your own home. I'll just say again, please check out JB Hivemind's Road Trippy, available on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle, and it's $6.66.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's stupid.
I didn't do it. That was Ray. It's a book I co-wrote, and you will like it. The end. And if you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourWrestling.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes, because it does iTunes magic.
Yes, the more people who rate us on iTunes, the more iTunes will show us to other people, and then they can rate us on iTunes, and then it just... It's a whole thing.
It's like a Katamari ball.
Yeah.
Right? If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to watchyourasslon.com/support, and there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can also get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, and live streams where we watch the episodes with you guys, all sorts of stuff. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden.
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And I also want to give a special shout out to Vincent E.L. for providing us with our theme song.
Thank you, Vincent.
You can check out more of their music at vincentel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the finale, which I thought, like, Earthshock felt kind of finale-ish. I mean, they killed a dude. But we're going to talk about the actual finale, Time Flight, which I think is about just trying to catch a plane. Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Goodbye, everybody. And just so you know, in when you do Time Flight, if I was going to be doing Time Flight, episode one would be Aftershock.
That's pretty good.
That's beautiful.
Now I'll never know if I was right.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.